Good morning. Can all of you hear? Council, can you both hear?
Good morning. I can.
Attorney Danner, can you hear? You have to unmute your mic when you speak, otherwise I can't hear you.
I can hear you.
Okay, very good, very good. So we all can work with our technology a little bit, so we're comfortable going back and forth. We are keeping time by cards that the marshal will raise, so you both have an opportunity. Start is the green card, and she will hold it up in that square. 5 minutes, the yellow card telling you you're just about ready to be done, and then the stop card that comes up so you know that your part of the argument is concluded. All of the members of the court are present, so I will call our second case for the day, Ritter versus Farrell. Attorney Greger, are you ready to proceed?
I am, thank you.
Please do.
May it please the court. My name is Jennifer Greger. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellants, Tony and Arliss Farrell of St. Germain, Wisconsin. In the room with me today is my co-counsel, Allison Ryman. My clients, the Farrows, bought the Bibbs Resort business from Ted and Carolyn Ritter in 2006. When they bought the business, they bought the trademarks too. Up until the Farrows bought the business, it was the Ritters, not the condominium association, that operated the business. The Ritters operated this business from 1986 all the way up until 2006 when they sold the business to the Farrows. The fact that the Ritters converted the real property to a condominium form of ownership in 1998 did not change any of this. That 2006 transaction between the Ritters and the Farrows included the purchase of both real property and intellectual and personal property, including the intellectual property. Trademarks are intellectual property, and when the Farrows purchased the business of the Ritters, including the goodwill, they also purchased the trademark rights. The distinction between real property and intellectual property is the key to resolving this case. The Ritters and the intervener, the Condominium Association, have both asked the Wisconsin courts to treat trademarks as real property. And the courts below have misunderstood and misapplied the trademark law to this case. This dispute started years ago because the Ritters became unhappy with how the Farrows were running the business after the Farrows purchased the business. And the Ritters began resuming use of the Bibbs Resort trademarks after that sale. There was a
Counsel, I've got a question for you. Are the Farrows asserting rights to a service mark or something more?
The Farrows are asserting rights to a trademark, a trade name, a service mark. All of those things are actually synonyms in this case, and it's the same legal principles that are applied regardless of what label we put on those rights.
So if another owner of an individual unit within the Bibbs Resort wanted to rent out the unit or sell it outright, is it your position that that owner would not be able to identify the unit as a Bibbs Resort unit?
No, it's our position that all of the unit owners can call their property what it is. There's nothing about the Farrow's position here that interferes with any property ownership right that the unit owners or even the association would have. So if I own a cottage at the Bibbs Resort, I can call it what it is. I can say that it's a cottage at the Bibbs Resort, and that's not an infringing use, and it doesn't take away anything from the Farrow's ownership rights in the marks.
And is that because the marks relate to the resort services that the Farrows provide? So if somebody is trying to sell a unit, or the association is calling itself the Bibbs Resort Association, that wouldn't confuse the public as to what the Bibbs Resort mark relates to, which is really the resort services being provided by the Pharaohs. Is that your position?
Yes, yeah, that's right. And another way to address that is to clarify that there's a difference between trademark ownership and trademark use. So trademark rights are born when somebody adopts a name or a device or symbol and uses that term in connection with providing goods or services. Those rights, after they exist, they can be bought, they can be sold, they can be licensed. Then if there's not a licensed use, we talk about things like whether there are infringing uses and non-infringing uses. In this case, it was the Ritter's resumption of use of the trademark rights in connection with a competing business that gave rise to the infringement. But nobody in this case, the Pharaohs in this case, are not accusing unit owners of any infringement. And any use that they would be making here would really just be more like a fair use than anything giving rise to the level of trademark ownership.
So go ahead, Justice Bradley, go ahead.
Just one more question and follow up. So your challenge is really just to the Ritter's use with respect to the provision of resort services and no other use, is that correct?
Not exactly. So because the services that issue in the case are resort management services, that part is right. But my client's challenge is to the determination of who actually owns the trademark rights. So it's our position that the Ritter's, so when the Ritter's sold the business to the Pharaohs in 2006, the Pharaohs also acquired the trademark rights. The Ritter's are arguing that, and the association now is the one who advances this argument, that because there was a condominium conversion in 1998, that somehow divested the Ritter's from owning those trademarks and then later selling them to the Pharaohs. So our position is that it was the Ritter's who operated the resort and the resort provided the resort management services all the way up until the 2006 sale of the business to the Pharaohs. It was never the association or anybody else or even the unit owners directly that were providing those types of services in this case. And it's frankly one of the errors of law that was made below that adds to some of the confusion in this case. And it just relates to the fundamental nature of trademark rights, which come from use. So it was always the Ritter's providing the services, operating the resort until they sold the business to the Pharaohs in 2006.
My question to you is, in order to maintain an action for trademark infringement, don't you have to have the exclusive rights to that trademark?
To maintain an action for trademark infringement, and it's usually articulated as one of the elements, the person or the party asserting that right has to have ownership of the marks. And so
you have to have the exclusive rights of the mark. If it's a mark that's shared by many people, it's not an exclusive mark, is it?
So again, this kind of comes back to the difference between ownership and use. So there are uses of trademarks that are not infringing uses.
Well, if they're licensed, I could understand that. Or if there was permission granted to use them, I can understand that. But in this case, the uses by the individual property owners who purchased parts of the condominium association and also the association's use in its own name were not licensed. They were not done with the permission of your clients.
So none of those things give rise to the trademark rights here. So in the same way that if I bought a coffee at Starbucks this morning, I can walk around with a Starbucks cup and I can say that I bought a cup of coffee at Starbucks. I can use the mark in that sense without having any ownership interest in it. And so
I'm talking about when you have a lawsuit for infringement, don't you have to have the right to exclude others or preclude others, I guess, from using that mark?
the Pharaohs do have, they do have that standing and that right here when the correct law is applied. And so the errors of law that occurred below perhaps add to that confusion. But
well, how do you get around the Court of Appeals decision, the first Court of Appeals decision that said it was error not to let the association intervene in this action? And the Court of Appeals made a determination that the association had an interest in using it, made a determination that the parties who bought the individual units from the association had an interest in the name. That was never appealed. So as a matter of law, they have a right to use those names. Isn't that correct?
No, I disagree with that. The way that I read the first Court of Appeals decision, which we call it Ritter 1 in the briefs, is that it decided the question of whether the condominium association can participate in the trial. And there is a set of factors that the Court of Appeals there used to make that analysis. And that decision said that the association can participate, have a seat at the table at the trial. But there's really no reason that the trial would have had a different outcome, even if the association were to participate in that trial.
Well, if the association had a legal interest, and I quote to you from the first Court of Appeals case, the association, however, has an interest in using the legal name Bibbs Resort Condominium, Inc. for business and marketing purposes. The individual owners also have an interest in identifying their units for marketing and other purposes as Unit X at Bibbs Resort Condominium. These interests are directly related to the subject matter of the Farrell suit, but those determinations were never appealed.
So that is the difference between trademark ownership and use. So
use is use. If you have exclusive ownership, the only way somebody else can use it is if you give them a license to use it or permission that may not be so formal, right?
No, that's not true. So okay. There is the concept of essentially a fair use gives the public, and it would give the unit owners in this case, the ability to use a mark in certain limited ways. But it doesn't mean that the unit owners of the association are owners or even the exclusive owner. So there's some forms of intellectual property where the exclusive owner vernacular is a little bit better fit, but it's a little bit more difficult fit when it applies to trademark law.
What case do you rely on for that proposition?
For the fair use type of concept?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's many cases that would apply it. I don't know that we've cited these in our brief. There's the seminal case that articulates that type of fair use is a New Kids on the Block case from the Ninth Circuit.
Now, is that based on a statute, or because there's trademark law that's based on a statutory right? We're here under common law rights. Were they articulating a common law right there?
It was a case in federal court. There were federal trademark registrations, but
right. So that's under a federal statute, but that's a different thing that we're dealing with. We're dealing with common law rights here, not a statutory right, correct?
We are, but it's all the same law. It would be essentially black letter restatement law. And they do have the citation for the New Kids on the Block case. If the court is interested, it's 971 F second 302 from the Ninth Circuit in 1992. It's really Hornbook trademark law that there are certain uses of marks available to the public. But in this case, they'd be available to the association and the unit owners too. So the Court of Appeals decision in Ritter 1 really has no, it made no determination on who is the ultimate owner of the Bibbs Resort marks. And I'll also just note too, that the association actually in its response to the petition for review called that quoted language that you had just read to be dicta, and probably that rises to the level of a concession that puts this issue to rest as well.
Who calls it to be dicta? The next Court of Appeals decision? I see.
The association in its response to our petition for review in the instant appeal. Page 7 of their response to the petition.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, you've talked about, fair use and licenses maybe not equating to, ownership. And I guess one of the challenges, of course, of this case is we have lots of use going on here with the unit owners and the logo on the individual properties. And obviously the name of the association, the name of the condominium and their ability to put up a sign that says Bibbs Resort, all that kind of stuff. So, and my question for you is, assuming I agree with your critique of the 98 conversion and the Court of Appeals implied conclusion that it was impliedly transferred over there, how do you survive, and win here on summary judgment when there's so many different conflicting uses going on that it seems like it's kind of hard for us to sort through who owned what, has the right to use what, and is just fairly using, the Bibbs logo and or name. So how would you help me sort through that?
Sure. So there's a very important, well-settled, old rule of law that was overlooked in Ritter 2, which is that the trademarks are generally presumed to pass with the sale of the business. We cite something like 17 cases for that proposition from all over the federal and state courts across the country in our briefing. And the Court of Appeals failure below to apply that rule to the case at hand is the simplest way to reconcile all of this. But even if you look at the record, there's a few really powerful pieces of evidence that really help to harmonize everything as well. One of those facts is that there's a number of places in the record that establish this, but it's always the Ritters that provided the resort management services both before and after the condo conversion and then all the way up until the sale to the Pharaohs. So those two things combined get us to the result we're asking for here. But even if you look at the documentation from the 2006 sale, there's some form documents in there, but there is plenty of facts, plenty of undisputed evidence right there that the goodwill of the business and along with it, the trademark rights were transferred to the Pharaohs in 2006. One of the errors that was made below by the courts was a bit of confusion over just the nature of trademark rights coming from use. And the fact that the goodwill generated by the use of the trademarks, it's inseparable from the trademark rights. So as soon as the goodwill is passed with the sale of the business, the trademarks go too.
Right. The name of the business or the name of the association being named, Bibbs Resort Condominium, and the association, given that name as well. Do you think those have any impact at all on the ownership of the rights? Or I know your argument is obviously that the use and the ownership here resides in the management of the resort, but does that documentary transfer of the name that's associated with this resort management, business under your argument, should that matter to us in any way? And if so, or if not, why not?
The entity name is not determinative at all here. Really, it's the nature of trademark rights coming from use and goodwill resulting from that use is what gives rise to the trademark rights. It's not an entity name. And there's plenty of companies out there where the formal business name is one thing and then their trademark is another. And then there's also just a plethora of examples where you've got, for example, a company name, an entity name, and then they own multiple brands. We do have some case law on that point in our brief, but one useful way that I've used to try to explain this or consider it is if we even just take Blackacre, the fictitious parcel of land that we all learned about in property class and in law school, and sort of use that to talk about some of these concepts separate and apart from the facts in the case at hand. If I own Blackacre, I could run a business on Blackacre. I could call it, for example, Blackacre Sandwiches, Inc. Maybe I have a sandwich business or food cart. And, you know, I can take that food cart, I can move it. I get trademark rights from selling sandwiches under the Blackacre name, mark, brand. And I generate goodwill because my customers enjoy the product and then begin to associate the source of those products with me. So the rights come from that activity, not from the entity name. I could sell Blackacre, the real estate parcel, and retain the rights to the trademarks.
So, Council, of what import is the statement in the Department of Revenue filing that was made by the Ritters, which stated that they wished to, they wrote that the Farrells would like to use the name Bibbs Resort as a trademark name since they are handling advertising, reservations, and payments under that name. Ted and Carolyn Ritter are amenable to that change. Of what import, if any, is that fact?
So I think in the context of all of the other documents about the sale of business in 2006, it supports the Farrows' position that when they bought the business, they bought the whole thing as a going concern, and they got all of the assets, personal property used in connection with the business.
Except at the outset of your comments today, you emphasize the difference between use and ownership. And here you have the Ritters saying that they acknowledge that Farrows want to use it and we're amenable for them to use it. Now, that's not transfer of ownership, that's use.
They use the word use, certainly. I don't know that they had in mind a legal determination or distinction with the choice of words that they used in that particular sentence in one document. But I will note that the action that is reflected in this document is that actually the Ritters changed their entity name from Bibbs Resort Inc. to Ritter Enterprises Inc. And the part of the purpose of this letter is to implement and effectuate that change.
Yes.
And there are other documents from 2006 that probably clarify what's going on in connection with the trademark ownership a little bit more than the September 7th letter. So the transaction itself was in June of that year. And there are some documents, an offer to purchase, which does explicitly identify both the goodwill and the business as well as trade names. That was an offer that was accepted by the Ritters, which then matured into the transaction that was the sale of the business to the Farrows. We also have in the record, it's at the Farrows Appendix 144 and 145, a report of a business transfer, which is a form signed by Carolyn Ritter. She signed it in August of 2006, but the effective date is June 23rd of 2006, where she explicitly identifies goodwill and that it was a complete transfer of the business.
Doesn't that beg the question in part? the response to your comments from opposing counsel and in your briefs and in the Court of Appeals opinion actually is, well, they can only transfer in 2006 what they had the right to transfer. In fact, I think the Court of Appeals in its ultimate paragraph states, consequently, in 2006, the Ritters could not have transferred and did not transfer ownership of the name Bibbs Resort to the Pharaohs. And that's because, it says in the sentence or two preceding, because they already transferred it in 1998 during the condominium conversion. So they didn't own it to transfer it in 2006. So of what import are these offers to purchase, et cetera, if that last paragraph of the Court of Appeals opinion is correct?
I will accept that if the Ritters did not own the rights in 2006, they couldn't then sell them to the Pharaohs. I'll accept that part of it. But to answer the question of who owns the trademark rights in this case, we have to analyze the two events. We have to analyze the 1998 condominium conversion, and then we have to analyze the 2006 sale of business. With respect to the 1998 condominium conversion, that I think is a pretty easy question. The declaration at issue submits the real property to the condominium form of ownership, but it doesn't really do anything to the trademark rights or business assets for a business that happens to be run on the property. Nothing in the Condominium Act of Wisconsin and nothing in the declaration requires a transfer of business assets like that.
Counsel, your time now is up for this part of your argument, and you can continue your discussion of that question in rebuttal.
Thank you.
Danner, are you prepared to proceed?
I am, Your Honor.
Please do.
Chief Justice Rogan Sack and fellow justices, I am John Danner. I do represent the interests of the intervener in this case, Bibbs Resort Condominium Incorporated, which is the owner's association for the entire condominium complex, which consists of 13 units. I would like to immediately go to some differentiation of terms that have been used. The Pharaohs argue that the Condominium Act does not require the transfer of a trade name. But I think what's most important in this case is what actually did transpire back in 1998. In 1998, prior to the condominium conversion, Bibbs Resort Incorporated was the alter ego of the Ritters. They were the sole shareholders. The corporation owned the entire real estate complex that Ritters, in fact, were operating as a small resort. Back in the late 90s and early 2000s, across the state of Wisconsin, where there were mom and pop resorts going on because of changes in zoning laws, they were converting them to condominiums. And then they took advantage of selling those condominiums by transferring the ownership obligations to the new owners, but keeping the rights to operate the entity as a resort. So in 1998, when the alter ego of the Ritters, as owner of the real estate, converted it, there were three actual entities that existed with the name Bibbs Resort. There was Bibbs Resort Condominium, which was the name of the condominium that was assigned in the declaration. There was the corporate entity, Bibbs Resort Condominium Incorporated, which was the owner's association that was required to be created by the Condominium Act, and Ritters chose to call it Bibbs Resort Condominium Incorporated. And then, of course, the Ritters continued to own as their alter ego, their interest in the company Bibbs Resort Incorporated. Following the conversion, there was a dilution. The Ritters, Bibbs Resort Incorporated, and if I may, for purposes of the argument here today, when I refer to Ritters, I would be referring to their alter ego corporation. Ritters sold four units during the period of time between 1998 and 2006. When you convert real estate into a condominium, even though you are the declarant and you own everything, you really don't own everything as an aggregate. What you own are the sum of the parts. And so in this particular case, Ritter's ownership went from owning a piece of real estate to owning 13 pieces of real estate, each with the name Unit X of Bibbs Resort Condominium. And it was that dilution, I think, that differentiates this case from the position that the Farrows would have you take, namely that the Condominium Act required the transfer of the trade name or trademark. But in fact, the reality was Ritter's themselves diluted the name by creating three separate entities that held that name. Now, when you look at the contract documents, there's no specific reference in any of the contract documents, meaning the offer to purchase, the business offer to purchase with real estate, WB-16. There is documentation after the closing that refers to the consensual use by Farrows.
Counsel, I'd like to go back to the 98 condo conversion for just a minute. Your opposing counsel, in their brief, they point out several things that weigh against the idea that these ownership rights were converted. They point to the fact that the condo itself is real property, including tangible personal property. Obviously, a trade, mark of some sort is intangible property. You have nothing in the documents that reference intangible property or any management services. The association didn't begin to run any business afterwards, at least from what I can tell in the record. And a mark can't be assigned separate from a business with which it's associated. And obviously, even the declarant is given the power there to continue operating the business. How would you respond to those counter arguments to your position?
Well, initially, I would indicate that when the conversion took place, Ritter's individually, with respect to its 13 units, entered into management agreements with itself, if you will, for the continued resort services that they had chosen to provide that they had previously provided in the aggregate. It's important to note, in my opinion, that the continuation of those services is not something that was the right of the Ritters anymore, nor was it the right of Farrows anymore. It was actually the right and ownership of the individual condominium unit owners who delegated to a third party, first Bibbs Resort Incorporated, and second by separate management agreements to Farrow Enterprises Incorporated, the ability to offer those services to the general public on property that they did in fact own. Had, as I indicated in my brief, hypothetically, when Farrows bought the business, all 11 units, excluding the Farrows units, had the option to enter into a new management agreement with Farrows. Now, seven of those units were owned by Ritter's. Ritter's, as part of their deal, delegated the ability to provide those resort management services to Farrow's company. The other four owners were not under any obligation to do so. They could have, on their own, chosen not to go with Farrow's and chosen to do it on their own. And in those cases, had they marketed their condominium units as part of Bibbs Resort, Farrows couldn't have stopped them because there was no restriction on those four units except that which was created by those management contracts.
So the challenge, of course, with that is that there's no documentary evidence that suggests any transfer of any intangible property to the association or the unit owners. It seems like you're potentially resting an awful lot on the name that was given to the association and to the condominium owner. Are you resting on more than the fact that the Bibbs name was given? Is that the sort of hook of your argument that the unit owners and or the association now took on this? I just don't see anything else in either the condo statutes that deal with that or the documentation in the record itself and the declaration.
Well, I think it's important to note that there's nothing in the Condominium Act that prohibits an association from owning intangible personal property. The Faroes would have us believe that if it's not permitted, it must be prohibited. And I take the opposite view that unless it is prohibited, it is permitted.
Even assuming you're correct, of course, we don't have any documentary evidence that they, in fact, took on a business, right? The association began to run a business, at least on the documents. Even if you're correct on that point.
Well, I would disagree respectfully, Your Honor, in the sense that it was the individual unit owners that authorized Faroes to provide the services. And that authorization came in the written management contracts that were executed in 2006. Previously, each of those unit owners had one with Ritters by their terms, as the attorneys averred in the affidavits, could not be sold, and so new ones were entered into.
And let me ask you, go ahead and finish your answer. I have one other question. Sorry.
I was just going to say, but for those contracts, Faroes would have no authority to do anything with regard to Bibbs Resort except as it related to their own units.
So suppose I disagree that the 1998 conversion to condominium did either impliedly or expressly in some way transferred the rights. Do you have any reasons why summary judgment should not be granted for your opponents in this case outside of that? They obviously point to the 2006 and the offer to purchase and the language in there, you know, about the transfer of goodwill normally being assumed to go with the business. There's some direct language in there. And I know you make some arguments in your brief, but my real specific question is, if I disagree with you on the 98 piece, can you still survive a grant of summary judgment for your opposition in this case? And if so, why or why not?
I believe we could, Your Honor, in the sense that, as the Court of Appeals in Ritter 1 indicated, there are significant factors that would have to be analyzed to determine what, in fact, actually did happen, both in 1998 and in the years between 1998 and 2006, between 2006 and 2008 when the contracts were terminated, and then what took place after that. And I think that those facts have to be looked at to ascertain whether or not the position of the association would prevail or the position of the Faroes would prevail.
Clearly as you can. So I want a quick follow-up. So what specifically in the record here on summary judgment creates a disputed issue of fact? Could you itemize that for me as you could, if you can?
Well, I guess for me to find disputed issues of fact, I would have to disagree with Judge Bloom's trial decision, where he indicated there were no disputed issues of fact. And summary judgment was in fact granted. And that was affirmed by Ritter II. I guess we would go back and Faroes argue that you can't use self-serving testimony to prove the existence of a fact, referring back to Carolyn Ritter's affidavit from 2011. And it would seem to me that the court took that affidavit on its face and approved the facts as being true, because there was no opposition offered at the time of summary judgment. And I guess we would have to go back and examine those facts to ascertain whether they were in fact true. It seems to me that...
Counsel, let me just interject. Paragraph 37 of the Court of Appeals opinion, and I'll just read the sentence, you don't have to pull it up, says the record establishes, because you've just been discussing the record, that the Ritters could not have sold an exclusive right to provide maintenance services on the property because the 1998 condominium declaration gave that right to the association. Of what import is that?
Well, by statute, the condominium association would be responsible for the maintenance of the common element. And in fact, as I pointed out before, as it relates to these contracts, the sources of all of these services arise from the obligations that the association was responsible for by virtue of the declaration and was the owned obligations, if you will, of the owners association. Effectively, the owners association and the owners are one and the same. They're alter egos of each other because the owners association is the 13 unit owners. And it is their decision as to how services should be provided or whether or not the association should take it upon itself to offer those services by hiring third parties as employees to do it, as opposed to outsourcing, which is what they had done initially with Ritter's and what they later did with Pharaoh's.
Does the record reflect the facts? This is summary judgment, I know, but does the record reflect the facts of the Pharaoh's maintaining this name, but no longer for years having the right to manage and provide the management services? When I started preparing for this, I thought to myself, why do they, since they no longer have the contract to manage the do any management services for the entity, the association or the individual owners, isn't there the potential for confusion? I mean, they no longer provide that service to the Bibbs Condo Association, or so. What? Why do they want to use it? Why do they continue to want to use it? Does the record reflect that?
I think it does, Your Honor. It goes back to, I believe it would be the transcript of the initial summary judgment hearing in front of Judge Bloom, and I don't have the page number or the reference page to it in the record in front of me, but I would indicate that argument was made that Pharaoh's had no problem whatsoever with the owners association or the individual unit owners making reference for marketing purposes to the sale of their real estate. What they objected to was the owners and or the association marketing the properties for rental purposes. And it seems to me, if you own a piece of property and you have a statutory or zoning right to rent it, you should be able to rent it. And that's what this case comes down to, is the Pharaoh's objection to anyone other than themselves marketing these properties for rent, even though the authority that they obtained to market those properties in the first place for rent came from contracts with each of the individual unit owners. And with respect to the owners association and the common element, with the owners association.
Unless I misunderstood her, it sounds like the Pharaoh's attorney is now saying that that would be fair use.
Well, what I heard her say this morning, Your Honor, was everything as it relates to the ownership of real estate except marketing the units for rent. If they could market the units for rent, then this case would not be before Your Honors.
So if an individual owner wanted to have an Airbnb, now I don't know what the documents may say in terms of the condo association documents, if that would be allowed. But that aside, if an individual owner wanted to rent it out on an Airbnb basis, that would be precluded by the Pharaoh's with the assertion that you're using the trademark. Is that what's being advanced?
That has been their argument up to this point, Your Honor. The difficulty here, and it's somewhat conflicting for me to say this, but the difficulty here is that this entire case arose in a dispute between Ritter's and Pharaoh's. And there was a breach of contract claim, there was a tortious interference claim, and there was a breach of common law trademark claim. The breach of contract claim was not found to exist by the jury. The tortious interference with contract claim was found to exist. And then, of course, the jury also found that there was a trademark violation at the common law level. The tortious interference claim was never appealed, so that's out there. There is a damages question, as Judge Bloom pointed out, where the tortious interference claim and the trademark claim were lumped together for damage purposes, so that would have to be ironed out. This case is ultimately not going to go away, regardless of what Your Honors do with the trademark claim. But I do believe that The Spheris case, which I cited in my brief, points out that corporate entities, in effect, have a trade name with regard to that corporate entity. And it's from that case that I came to the conclusion that it was Ritter's who started out with Bibbs Resort Incorporated, and then on their own, as the full shareholders of that corporation, chose to create three separate legal entities with the same name. If there is confusion, it is confusion with regard to the conduct that took place in 1998. The contract documents, which talk about goodwill being sold and trademarks being sold, the trademark itself could not be sold unless it was transferable. If, in fact, it didn't exist in Ritter's Bibbs Resort Incorporated's sole name, but was, in fact, diluted or was a collective mark back in 1998, then it was Ritter's could not have transferred that mark other than to the extent that Pharaoh's bought two units and would have the rights to use that name as unit owners. There is a case, Your Honor, that there's, it seems to me there's a difference between transferring a mark without goodwill or transferring goodwill without the mark. And it is possible under the federal case law to transfer goodwill, which was the case here, without the mark. The goodwill that was transferred, in effect, was Ritter's operation of this as a resort, people coming to Big St. Germain Lake for vacation. Here's a 13-unit resort right on the water. People can come there. And over Ritter's course of conduct, apparently it was run rather well because they were able to sell it to Pharaoh's. The owners did not like the way Pharaoh's were operating the resort. The owners did not like the fact that Pharaoh's not only were marketing their units at Bibbs Resort Condominium, but also cottages from other units, and they felt there was a conflict. And that was the basis that the contracts were terminated. And of course, that was the basis that this dispute ultimately arose from. And in behalf of the unit owners who are the members of the association, they should be able to continue to have the rights to do what they want with their real estate without any restrictions on their ability, on their alienation of that. So I realize that I'm not using my entire 30 minutes, and I hope that doesn't dismay the court this morning. But in review, I do think it's important that while this is a summary judgment case, and this court would, by virtue of previous holdings, review the summary judgment award de novo, this de novo review is a little bit different, as Chief Rogensack pointed out, because there were certain things from Ritter 1 which were not appealed from. And the most significant of those was the interest by the association, the interest by the unit owners to be able to use the name to market their property as they saw fit. It's important to note that this particular appeal comes 14 years after the contract was entered into, 7 years after the jury determined that there was no breach of contract, although they claimed that there was a trade name violation. It's important to note that when Ritter converted the property into a condominium, the ownership of that property changed. It's a condominium form of ownership. Instead of owning a large tract of land with 13 buildings on it, Ritter's then owned 13 buildings separately described from the other 12 units, each unit was separately described from the other 12. And in condominium forms of ownership, the minority is subject to the will of the majority.
Counsel, can you please tell me what you're relying on for the proposition that the mark can be transferred without the goodwill? Transferred, the ownership of it, not use, not fair use, but the actual ownership of it. How do you transfer goodwill without transferring the mark?
There's a federal case, Your Honor. It's Berni, B-E-R-N-I, versus International Gourmet Restaurants. It's found at 838 Fed Second 642, and it allows the holding in that particular case made a determination that you could retain ownership of a mark with the transfer of goodwill if there was the ability to demonstrate the intent to resume use of the mark, that there was some portion of the goodwill that was retained, and and the resumption took place within a reasonable period of time. I think that the intent to resume it is found in the fact that each of the individual management contracts were terminable with 90 days written notice. If they were perpetual, obviously there would be no intent to resume the use of the name. But I don't think you can take or infer from the contracts that were entered into, each of the unit owners entered into a contract with Pharos. I don't think you can interpret from that that they gave up everything that they owned. I don't think they did at all. In summary,
any questions from my colleagues? Okay, do you want to sum up then, counsel?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. I believe that it's important for this, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Yes, I do have a question. It deals with exclusive use. It's asserted that in 2006, there could not be a transfer by the Ritters to the Pharos because the Ritters did not have exclusive ownership of the trade name in 2006. Of what import is exclusive ownership? You gave a rendition of three different entities that are using this name or related names. Do you have to have exclusive ownership of the trade name?
I believe you do have to have exclusive ownership, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I believe that the dilution by Ritters in 1998, when they created the two separate entities, that dilution effectively took away the exclusive ownership. When Bibbs Resort Incorporated transferred two units to the Pharos, they only transferred two of the 13 units. They still owned seven, but there were four other unit owners that had a significant interest in the name Bibbs Resort Condominium, Bibbs Resort Condominium Incorporated. And the Spheres case would seem to indicate that each of those entities have the right to claim it. And as the Court of Appeals indicated, and as Judge Bloom indicated, that could be considered to be a collective mark.
It seems that you're making just two potentially different arguments. Well, at least a fallback position. One is that maybe the marks were transferred, or at least enough of the use of them was transferred such that there's not exclusive use. Or maybe that there's not enough on summary judgment to say so, and that would be potentially a fallback position, I assume, as well.
Well, I guess the first is my position, Your Honor, that what Pharos bought effectively was the ability to enter into contracts with the individual unit owners to provide services, and they chose to do it under the name that Ritters had previously used. Albeit it was a consensual use on the part of Ritters to allow it to occur, but I think it was also consensual on the part of each of the individual unit owners to allow it to occur, or they wouldn't have entered into the contracts in the first place. But had each of those individual unit owners, other than the Ritters, chosen not to enter into those contracts with Pharos, there was nothing in the transaction between Ritter and Pharos that would have prohibited them from marketing their individual units as Unit X at Bibbs Resort or Bibbs Resort Condominium.
If you're right, counsel, is it your position that all of the ownership, exclusive ownership of the mark transferred to the association?
Well, whether it's transferred to the association or to the individual unit owners, I think, Your Honor, is essentially the same thing, because the association is, in fact, the aggregate grouping of the individual unit owners.
So, but that is your position, that there was an exclusive transfer to the association. If so, what do you make of the fact that the declarant here maintained the opportunity to do business as and give due management resort services as Bibbs Resort? How does that square with the idea that all of the ownership was transferred to the association?
Well, I think the conduct of the parties, Your Honor, would indicate that the ability to operated as a resort belonged to more than the declarant. I'm sure that the court is aware that the declaration provided the declarant could continue to operate it as a resort. But more importantly, once Ritters, as the owner of seven units, consented to the same operation by Pharos, there was essentially a consensual modification of that declaration without it being in writing, an implicit modification of the declaration to allow the property to continue to be operated as a resort by some entity or person other than the declarant.
That would be a separate question, though, in terms of what happened in 1998, right? I mean, if you still have the declarant here, which is named Bibbs Resort Inc., reserving a right under the declaration to continue providing management services at the resort. How, again, just, I don't understand how that squares with the theory that all of the marks and the ownership of the marks would have transferred to the association. It seems like what's good for the goose has to be good for the gander here. And part of it is your argument is that some of it was diluted because its name was spread abroad, but doesn't that also work against your position?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, the reservation was not to provide management services. The reservation was to provide resort operations. Management operations would go to such things as maintaining the common element.
Sure. I'm sorry. That's what I meant. Managing the resort services. I apologize for not using the right word. Yes. Yeah.
And so implicit, well, expressly stated in the declaration is the declarant's ability to continue to operate the property as a resort. And then the unit owners in 2006 essentially implicitly consented to that being transferred operation as a resort to Farrell, that the exclusive nature of the declarant's right to operate it as a resort, I think, went away. In summary, Your Honors, it is my opinion and belief that the Court of Appeals and the trial court judge came to the right conclusion, albeit for different reasons. And I don't think those different reasons are incompatible with each other. And I believe that the conduct of the parties in 1998 dictates what Ritter's could do in 2006 and what they could not do, in my opinion, is transfer a trade name that they didn't know that they no longer owned. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Counsel, will you proceed now with rebuttal?
Thank you. I'd like to start by clarifying the concept of the marketing use that would be permissible here versus a marketing use that would be impermissible or an infringement of the Farrow's rights. So the use that I identified earlier, just simply describing the property, would not necessarily be an infringement. It doesn't go over the line. But what the Ritters were doing in this case, they went much further than a descriptive fair use here. After 2006, they started a new website, bibbscottages.com. They really restarted an infringing business. And that type of marketing use is not permissible. It's an infringement.
Could the association create a website, Bibbs Resort Inc., and use the logo on the website to describe the property?
Was the question, could the association do that?
Without infringing, yes.
No, that would be an infringement. That goes over the line of a descriptive or a fair type of use.
What if the purpose of the website was not for rentals, but it was simply, let's say there's a login for unit owners so that their condo documents would appear there, or they could have communications with each other about the property and things like that. They're not marketing their properties on that website. They could not use that or the logo. Is that what you're saying?
That's a closer call, because that would depend exactly what the website looks like. If it's purely a descriptive, dear owners of Bibbs condos, you can log in here. I think that one is maybe a fair use, but what was happening in this case was really a situation of over the line competitive and confusing use of the trademark rights that went with the business that the Farrows just purchased.
Could the owners retain the use of the logos on their individual units without infringing the trademark?
My clients would not have an issue with that right now, but that issue I would submit actually is not before the court today because the Faroes are not accusing the unit owners of infringement or anything of that sort.
Well, it's a bit tricky because, of course, a decision that this court makes is going to apply not only to these parties, but to other parties in the future. And so what I've been trying to get at in my earlier line of questioning is exactly what is the scope of fair use then? Because if we had a ruling that recognized that there was a trademark owned by your clients, I would need to understand how does that limit the other unit owners and the association from simply using the name to describe the geographic location or what their condo units actually are. Do you see my issue here?
I think so. It's a matter, frankly, of Hornbook trademark law under the federal scheme. It's not as well developed in the Wisconsin state law. But with respect to drawing a line between uses that are okay and uses that are not okay, one tool that is probably useful is to go back to the standard for trademark infringement, which is the likelihood of consumer confusion. So we could say that confusing uses are not okay, but non-confusing uses would be fine.
Well, that goes back then to the rental of the properties. Let's say there's an individual unit owner who I think the other Justice Bradley said wants to post the unit for rental on Airbnb. Is that an infringing use for them, for that unit owner to say this is a Bibbs Resort condominium and to even have the logo identifying that it's Bibbs Resort?
So again, it would depend on how it's done, but it is probably not infringement to just have a mere descriptive use. And all of trademark law grapples with where to draw these lines and how to apply these principles. I'll actually just note really quickly that the Spiris case that Mr. Danner mentioned was abrogated kind of significantly by the Madison Reprographics case, another court of appeals case, and that for a basic trademark infringement analysis with the likelihood of confusion analysis, that would be probably a better case to look to. I see that my time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both for fine arguments and for working with us on this new form of oral argument that we're using during the course of the pandemic. We will conclude now, and the court will meet in closed conference at 1:30. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.